Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Big year, so thus one of the band parents has to now suggest to the band what they should be playing. Sit in the stands and watch.
I'm just trying to be an active participant. Trying to help the greater good.
Good, sit in the stands and watch. Now you're helping the greater good.
I mean, you know, everybody's got ideas. You know, they're always looking for something to do. Well, here, you know, I thought I'd give you an idea. Run with it. Don't run with it. It's okay.
Sure. It's a great idea.
Well, all right, let's be honest. I mean, let's be honest. He's not going to be number one trumpet anyway, so it's really not a problem.
And now the band forms the Five Rings.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And they will continue marching all season long toward Rio. All right.
Maybe they can actually form the shape of the torch.
Now they form the shape of the country of Brazil.
All right. That's a big band. You might need a couple extra fields for that.
All right. Trade time. Scott Kazmir dealt to Houston today. Definite domino effect. Ross Insada joins us from MLB Network. Ross, welcome. Great to have you back.
Yeah, great to be back again. We're just getting into good baseball talk.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. Very quickly, you think Scott Kazmir is it for the Astros? They might be done.
Oh yeah, they're like I said, they're definitely done. It's the guy they wanted. They're pretty much good all around the field, and if they get into playoffs, get past the wild card game, you know, if they weren't to pass out the Angels right now in the AL West, they get through that wild card game and they got three starters. All you really need is three starters in the playoffs. They got Keuchel. He's come onto the scene and emerged as a top of the rotation starter. As I said before. A young guy in Lance McCullers that is, you could say, is the AL Rookie of the Year as of this point. Could make a case for his teammate Carlos Correa at short. And then there's Scott Kazmir. That's all you pretty much need. And then Colin McHugh will slide in as a number four starter. And as I alluded to before, Kazmir's a Houston native, so he'll definitely have some friends and family watching him on an everyday basis. And I guarantee they probably rolled this deal by him and said, you want to go to Houston, go back to your hometown. And I don't see any reason why he wouldn't say yes to that.
Okay, Cueto, Price, Hamels. Each one brings something to the table that's different. First of all, Hamels is the proven postseason pitcher. Of all three of them, what he's done in the postseason, being a World Series MVP and so forth, outstanding. Price has been good. Cueto's been okay when the money's been on the table. Hamels has been the best. Hamels brings with him like the feel of an off-season free agent acquisition because he still has 3 years left in his contract. Cueto and Price are rentals where you don't have to worry about contract at the end of the year with them. Potential landing spots and interest for each.
Boy, that's tough. First, I've been hearing this name. You know, Hamels being tossed around at this place the past few weeks, and I don't see any reason why he couldn't go there because they're a team that could handle that contract, and it's the Dodgers. I hate to say a stereotypical big market team that could take a hold of a big contract like Hamels, but they do need starting pitching. Granted, they do have that Zach Greinke guy that has that scoreless inning streak going, a 130-something ERA, last year's NL MVP in Clayton Kershaw. But beyond that, they've been troubled with injuries in their rotation. Ryu's been out all year. Brandon McCarthy's been out all year. A guy like Mike Bolsinger, he hasn't been doing that well for them. And then they have had a bunch of fringe guys starting the number five spot. So I would say Hamels, to the Dodgers, and I hate to go with a generic team like that, but that's where I've been hearing his landing spot being. With Cueto, now that you take the Astros out of the rotation, they were, no pun intended there, but I keep hearing his name being tossed around to the Yankees. They're not too satisfied with the performance of CC Sabathia this year, and seems like every time Tanaka's out there on the mound, it could be his last with that arm situation. You know, they just got Ivan Nova back from Tommy John surgery. Can he be that reliable?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really it's been unlike the Yankees the past few years of, you know, taking on a salary of a guy like that. Granted, he is a rental player, but I could see they are in that battle for the AL East title. And, you know, is Johnny Cueto a guy that could put them over the hump in that division? I think he could, so I'll take Cueto to the Yankees. Price, I want to say right now he's going to stick with the Tigers as of right now. The only reason I say that is it sure doesn't seem like the Tigers have committed to being a seller right now. I still sort of think that GM Dave Dombrowski is still convinced they can do something in that division, that they could catch a spark at any point. Him and Cespedes and Rajay Davis have been rumored to possibly be on the trade deadline, but I still sort of think that team still considers himself a playoff contender. Maybe this week will determine that, and Price could be a late-minute trade deadline deal, but I'll say right now he'll stick with Detroit.
What about the Cubs and all this? They have some money, and they seem to have some daring.
As in for one of the three, I could see that.
I mean, Javier Baez evidently has been dangled out there, and he's coming off the DL this week.
Yeah, I just think specifically with Baez, well, I'll go back to the pitchers in a sec, but I just think Baez has somewhat lost his touch as a top prospect in baseball. He's a extremely high strikeout-prone hitter. It's incredible. You don't see that much out of a second baseman shortstop like that. He's basically, you know what, I hate to compare him to a Pedro Alvarez or a Chris Carter or a Mark Reynolds, but he is like that. He's a guy right now that you place him into a major league lineup all year, he's a guaranteed 170-plus strikeout guy. You can't have that with a guy that's 23, 24 years old. The Cubs have multiple pieces in their system that they could get done. C.J. Edwards was the guy that got in the Matt Garza deal a few years ago. He's their top prospect right now. Dare I say that they dangle Kyle Schwarber, that's been, you know, hitting the ground running in his brief stint in the major leagues right now. He just got called up the other day. I could agree with you. I could see Jed and Theo wanting to get the job done, put this team entrenched in a spot to play in the wild card game and essentially put them ahead of the teams like the Giants and the Mets, but I honestly have a feeling that, and you talked about, they have money to throw around, and that, like I said, they do have, you know, Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein, two smart guys headlining their front office. Mm-hmm. I just think that they want to get the job done during the off season. If there's going to be so many guys, why give them a top prospect like for a David Price or a Johnny Cueto when they're going to be available this off season, along with a guy like Jordan Zimmermann? You can have your choice of some top-notch free agent starting pitchers this offseason. Why mortgage the future that they've built to this point when you could get these guys in a few months anyway?
Jonathan Papelbon has performed well when he's been allowed to be in that spot this year. He also can be a volatile personality. He also has a $13 million verifier for next year. It appears the market for the moment on him is dry. Is that accurate?
I can agree with that, definitely. I think this all goes back to the same thing with Hamels. The Phillies just, something's going on there that they just didn't want to pull the plug on, you know, guys like Hamels and Papelbon. Their worth has gone down since then, maybe even last year, even the beginning of this year. They could have gotten much more for both guys.
They could have dealt Utley last year.
Yeah, exactly. There's many guys you could say that. Revere, they could even, dare I say, Jeff Francoeur, maybe his worth is higher than it's ever been right now. But they could have traded him and even gotten a small piece that could make a difference down the line. But with Papelbon, I think the teams that are in contention right now, sans the Tigers, as I talked about, they're not sure where they're going right now. But contending team, they have no problem with their closer or their back end, their bullpen. Go down the list,
right?
And they're pretty much fine. So I think the Phillies might have dropped the ball there. Maybe the one team I could say is Toronto.
Yeah, but they have evidently backed out.
Yeah, well, it's probably because they got a young right-hander, Roberto Osuna. He's 21 years old. He never played a game above high A ball, and he's high velocity guy out of the bullpen. And they've really liked him ever since they gave him the job over Brett Cecil. And I wouldn't think Jonathan Papelbon would want to be an eighth inning guy to a 21 year old. So,
no.
The Phillies. That's their fault there.
There was some talk that the Pirates might be interested in Ben Revere. I don't quite know what he brings to the table based on the outfield. I mean, the Pirates dealt Travis Snyder in the offseason, which I felt was a mistake. I thought he was the quintessential fourth outfielder that everybody needs. Not a starter, not a star, but a fourth outfielder. He'll play 90 to 110 games for you. He'll get his fair share of at-bats when he plays. He'll do very well for you. They dealt him to Baltimore. Now, do they need a fourth outfielder? Yeah, they need a fourth outfielder. But Ben Revere, I don't know what he brings to the table for you.
Well, I was pretty much going to say a fourth outfielder. I think the reason why Travis Snyder was dealt is they expected, he's been having trouble at the plate lately, Sean Rodriguez, and Josh Harrison, sir. I think they were expecting him to maybe fulfill that super utility role that he had the past few years. Granted, they moved Alvarez over to first and put Harrison essentially full-time at third base, but maybe he was going to get a Sunday start here or there in right field. But it all boiled down to they gave Polanco the job in right field.
Right.
Yeah, Polanco's young, and he's been subject to some scrutiny this year that he hasn't essentially lived up to expectations this quick. I think that has something to do with people seeing all these young guys making such an impact around Major League Baseball now that in the pedigree Polanco came in with, and he's been hot as of late. He's getting on base. He's doing his job. Granted, he did have that blunder the other day in Kansas City, but Revere, it would just be another bench guy. The same goes with Francoeur. Francoeur would probably do the same job. He would probably face left-handers playing right field in place of Polanco, and that would be his job. So,
well, on a team that has mediocre base running skills, and I think that's the best I can say. The Pirates are a very poor base running team. Revere is actually a good base runner, but is not a good, contrary to what people think, he's not a good defensive outfielder, and he doesn't have a great arm.
Yeah, and Polanco does have that great arm, and as we've seen this year, he's been, you could say, average defensively. He shows those five tool signs of having a really good arm. He's throwing out some guys from the outfield this year and right. He's, tracked down some balls when Polanco, Marte, and McCutchen are in peak positioning there out in the outfield. There's no other better defensive outfield in baseball because of all three of them are natural center fielders. Revere is also a natural center fielder, and I agree with you there, but it all goes back to your point. What would you do with them when you have four everyday outfielders? I would have a feeling that one of the two in Revere and Polanco wouldn't be too pleased with their playing time.
Ross, an absolute pleasure as always. Thanks for hanging in there with us. We appreciate it.
No problem, Steve, and hope to talk to you next week.
Ross Insana, MLBnetwork.com. Encouraging Phillies news, I felt, Kevin.
Sure.
We'll come back with more in a moment. Open lines, 800-795-9565. Had a fun show today. More tomorrow. Don't forget Jack Hamm on the show tomorrow. Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Coming up next week, David Jones, Patriot News. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. Greg Brown of the Pirates, all next week.
Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The record will be broken. That's right, the 100-year record is going to be broken this month if Sunbury Motors sells 80 new Fords by July 31st. SMC is where you want to be if you want a new Focus for $16,863. SMC is where you want to be if you want a new Ford Escape for $19,993. SMC is where you want to be if you want a new F-150 4x4 for under 30 grand. Sunbury Motors isn't taking this record lightly. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, you owe it to yourself to go to Sunbury Motors before August 1st. If you want 0% on your next 2015 Focus, Fusion, Escape, Explorer, or Expedition, SMC is where you want to be. Sunbury Motors will sell 80 new Fords by July 31st. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza. SMC is where you want to be to save more money on your next new Ford.
Astros make their move. They get Scott Kazmir in a trade today. And that's probably the guy that they were looking for. And so there's a domino to it. There have been a lot of talk about Cole Hamels there. No. Talk about Johnny Cueto there. No. Now you got to make a decision as to what to do. If you want a rental, first of all, see what David Price is going to do. You know, what will the Tigers do with David Price? And the Tigers have a big decision to make between now and the middle of next week. Do they hang on until Miguel Cabrera gets back? Or do they just say, forget it, this is a lost season, and trade Yoenis Cespedes and David Price? Price would be a rental. His contract's out at the end of the year. The Tigers have not negotiated with Price reportedly since the end of spring training. So a team that gets him would just say, hey, look, we're going to have him for 2 months or we're going to move on. Same thing with Johnny Cueto. Got him for 2 months, move on. Cole Hamels is an interesting acquisition for a team because it would be the equivalent of you going into the free agent market in December, getting a guy to a three-year contract, but you get to use him this year too. So it just depends on what you want and where you want to go with it. Dodgers are certainly going to be in the thick of this. The Cubs are going to certainly be in the thick of this. Mo, I saw the CBSSports.com report on what the Cubs, you know, Starling, Castro, and Baez. Really? Like, that's an all-out deal? Really? Sure. Kevin brought up the Harvard study. I go to Harvard for pediatric cancer research. I don't go to them for football. Let's see. What else? Anything else on your list here? A lot of like 8 or 9 IndyCar items.
I think you hit them all.
You sure? So make sure we hit all of them.
With a sledgehammer, you hit them, yes.
That sounded bitter. You might need more time off.
No. All right. I think I will. What a great idea.
Just thinking of the audience. All right. that was so easy. Why do you make it so easy?
It's I don't know. It's kind of frustrating.
Hey, it was good having Derek on the show today, wasn't it? He was a terrific guest.
Well, I thought he had some really interesting thoughts on the sport itself and
mm-hmm.
You know,
he was candid.
What happens?
But he was candid though. And what I liked was the fact that he didn't just like sit there and go, hey, we're this. He said, look, we need young pitchers. We got to get more young people into this game. And he said, look, he said, we're a fading sport. He said, we got to change things around. Good for him. You know, didn't come out there with a group of canned lines and the whole thing. He talked.
I think he's right, actually, too. I think a big help would be to get, you know, softball in general in the back in the Olympics.
Well, the problem, the reason that softball's out of the Olympics is because the United States is too good.
Right.
That's the reason it's out. Let's see. What else do we have here? Kevin has quarterback rankings.
Yeah, those are fun. It actually is a fun topic, but it's just, you know, has okay, there's no meat to it, but that's all right. Bradford will be healthy. What happens for the Eagles if he isn't ready? Then they'll start somebody else.
Did you know there was an International Federation of American Football?
Yes, I did.
I did not know that until I saw it the other day on television. They were playing a game in Canton. I think it was the U.S. and Japan.
Mm-hmm.
As I understand it, they play it in 71. They play football, not soccer. Mm-hmm. Now, this is football the way we know it in the mm-hmm. United States, in 71 yeah. countries.
Yes.
I did not know that. And mm-hmm. can you imagine the interest if football became an Olympic sport? NBC would create their own channel just for that.
I don't think there'd be much interest in watching Japan play Mexico in football.
If it's the right time of the season, if it's the right season, though, if it's like springtime, or if it's before, or if it's just when preseason games are on, I think there might be. I think it might work.
No.
You don't think people would watch football to watch football? If it's the football like they know it.
No.
See, I think the problem with the CFL and the reason that Canadian football at this time of year doesn't take off in the States, I don't think enough people understand the additional rules.
No, I think they just don't know who the players are.
That's a good point. Exactly what is a rouge and how do you get one?
Well, it has to do with the ball coming out of the end zone.
Is that on a punt or a field goal attempt? Or both?
Both. Both.
Can you get a rouge on a kickoff?
Yep.
See, these are the things that I think are interesting, but I don't get it.
But Japan playing Mexico would not interest anybody. Again, it'll be the same thing. When Team USA played, the ratings would be off the charts. And when it comes to the Olympics and international sports, it's the front of the jersey.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I didn't know WKOK had any assignments in Key West. I mean, at least when I go, I say I'm on vacation. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Keywords 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin is driving another great Sunbury Motors vehicle this week.
Yeah, this week we're driving around in a 2015 Kia Optima Hybrid LX sedan. And you could be driving around in that vehicle getting about 35 miles to the gallon and maybe going to the gas pump every other week, rather, at best. All you have to do is visit Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 Hummel's Wharf. Tell them you want to check out one of the 2015 test drive models, and you can drive it away for $22,800. That's about $6,000 off the sticker price. It's brand new. You're going to be the first owner. And if you want the 2014, they have one of these on the lot. Sale price to $21,357. These are the Kia Optima hybrids. Plenty of room in the back seat. Very comfortable. Very fun to drive. Sporty look. LED taillights, so you don't have to worry about busting your knuckles to replace the lights in the back, because with LEDs, you probably won't have to replace it. And oh yeah, the hybrid electric system, 120 months on the warranty. I think you can do the math on that and figure you won't have to really worry about it too much. Check it out at Sunbury Motors, the Kia dealership, routes 11 and 15 Hummel's Wharf, Ford, Lincoln, and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury. And by the way, the silver 2015 will be back on the lot tomorrow by noon for you to take home in time for the weekend.
Beck, we'd like to invite everybody over at about 11:45 tomorrow.
Oh, this is not going to be pretty.
You what? You want to watch a spectacle?
Yeah, it's not going to be pretty.
a grown man being pried out of the car. Nothing like it.
Yeah, it's definitely not a pretty scene. I have been known to not only cry but scream out
from my cold dead hands.
You and Chuck Heston. Absolutely. Loving it. Okay. There's been some talk, and it's only talk, about expanding the college football playoff. And I apologize. There are usually some topics where I go off the Kevin Hurst script. Okay.
That's your show.
I'm just checking. Some talk about expanding the college football playoff to 8 teams. And you knew it would get some traction once the first college football playoff took place. The college football playoff played out exactly the way I felt it would play out going back 30 years ago. I would talk about college football playoff on talk shows 30 years ago. And when I would talk about it back then, I would talk about it being an 18 playoff. A lot of people had talked about it being a 16-team playoff. I was never comfortable with 16. In FBS, how many are there in FBS? 16?
I think there might be more than that in FCS. I'll have to count up. I'm not sure. I was thinking more than that, but let me count it up.
I think it's 16 in FCS per division. You know, it was Bucknell was trying to get in last year, trying to be, what, one of the 16 teams?
Yeah, it was right? Going to be an at-large, right.
And I was never comfortable with 16 anyway. I'm also not comfortable with the idea of 8 unless you decide to do away with the conference championship games. To me, the conference championship games are an additional playoff level. What's interesting, though, is that last year, none of those teams would have been in the college football playoff if they had won. Georgia Tech, which lost to Florida State, Wisconsin lost to Ohio State, Missouri lost to Alabama, and Arizona lost to Oregon. None of them, even winning, would have qualified for the college football playoff. TCU, Baylor, Michigan State, they're three teams that would have made it. Michigan State didn't even win its division and was not even in the Big Ten championship game, but they would have made it had it been an 8-team playoff. I don't like the idea of college football championship games and an 8-team playoff in combination, because at some point there has to be a limit to me as to how far you take this. If you eliminate the conference championship games, now I can buy into it, an 18 playoff being played on that weekend after the first Saturday in December. I could buy into it then, no question. And then you'd play the semifinals on New Year's Eve. Then you would play the final on that Monday. Because you do get to a point. You look at the NCAA tournament, for example. The NCAA tournament does occur during school time. You do have to miss school time to participate in the NCAA tournament. Penn State's been fortunate over the years when it came to the Big Ten tournament. There's only one time they've ever missed school for the Big Ten tournament. One time ever. All the other ones have always occurred during Penn State's spring break. So that's why in the Big Ten tournament, no matter how deep the run, I mean, this time they won Wednesday, Thursday, and then they played Friday, then came back Saturday. Well, they didn't miss a single day of class to do it. It was during spring break. The NCAA tournament, though, is a different proposition. You will miss class to play in it. No question. But you're also missing class in the middle of the semester. And it might be, maybe some school here or there has midterms somewhere in there, maybe. But you're not going into finals.
Football's different. When you're in December, players do have to take finals. And as much as, like they really need finals. What does Jameis Winston need finals for? Look, the number of marketable guys in college football can be counted out on two hands. I mean, let's be serious. The number of marketable college football guys can be counted out on two hands. All right, 24 in FCS?
Yeah, there's 24. I thought there were 16 in the first round, and then there's eight that get a bye. They're usually, obviously, conference champions, but there's actually 24, and they just expanded it to 24 from 20 a few years ago.
Well, it's too long.
I agree with you. This first round starts November 29th this past year. The second round was on the 6th, then the quarterfinals on the 12th, 13th, and then ended up going to the 20th, the 19th and 20th for the semifinals before the championship on January 10th.
Well, I feel on the high school level between districts and states, it's too long.
It's a very long schedule. You're looking at the beginning to mid-December, and the biggest issue is winter sports get adjusted because of it, or get hurt, rather, because of it.
No, that's why you specialize. All right.
But
here's the issue I have with it, though, is that you play 10 regular season games. You can play as many as 6 postseason games. Really?
That depends on how many teams are in your district, too.
I mean, you're going to play as, say it's 7. You're going to play almost as many postseason games as regular season games? No.
Some high school teams in districts that have a bunch of teams are technically playing their district championship game, and this is the way it is in AA with District 4. Their championship game is technically a first-round state playoff game.
Right.
As far as the bracket's concerned.
Now, as for FBS, if they were to compensate the conferences properly, because, for example, the Big Ten has a $25 million a year TV contract with Fox to carry the Big Ten championship game, you'd have to compensate the Big Ten and the SEC and the Pac-12 and the ACC for the loss of their championship games until the contracts are then finally supposed to run out. I think you'd have to do that. But I think if you wanted to have an 18 playoff, I think that's the only way to do it in my mindset is to take the first Saturday in December, play quarterfinal games instead of conference championship games, and then have the semifinals on New Year's Eve and then the final when it's supposed to be that second Monday in January. Because if you take it to 8, and now you're going to be playing on Christmas Eve, a heavy amount of your preparation is going to have to be during finals weeks for these players. And again, look, the number of marketable players in college football is, what, 10? All right, let's really, really expand it, 15. There are 10 to 15 marketable college football players out there. That's why this whole thing about compensations always cracked me up. Okay, name me the star player this year for Arizona State. I didn't pick a small school. I picked a big school, Arizona State. Who's their star player? Who's the guy that they should build around? Come on, you're all college football fans. Who is it? Can't name him, can you? You don't know who he is. There just aren't that many guys that are marketable star guys. You take the how many Power Five conference teams are there? 65? I think it's 65, right? You take 65 and multiply that times a conservative number, 100. You have 6,500 college football players in the Power Five conferences, between scholarships and walk-ons and so forth. Of those 65, 10 to 15 are marketable.
And there's probably out of that 6,500, let's be fair here, this is Power 5 now. Of the 6,500 players playing Power 5 football, 10 to 15 are marketable, and in reality, 200 of them are going to be drafted. 6,300 will not be in a given year. The rest of them need to take the finals. The rest of them need their degree. And you've got to be aware of the fact that it's still a university and it's still a university mission. Now, can I go to 8 teams in a college football playoff? Yeah, but that's if the college championship game is eliminated. Then I'd be fine. Because what they did was they expanded the season, the regular season, to a 12th game beginning in 2006. Because this is their way of not having a, this was an appeasement for not having a playoff. No playoff, we're not going to have a playoff, but we'll give everybody a 12th team and give everybody a chance to earn some extra money. Well, I can now tell you there isn't an athletic director in the country that is going to vote away the 12th game. They need the cash. So the 12th game is here to stay. So now what do you do with the 13th game? Well, the 13th game for most, for many teams would end up being a bowl game. The 13th game for the teams that are in the top eight, well, the, you know, for some of them it's going to be a conference championship game. And if you take the conference championship game out, you can make that a quarterfinal game. Because in the end, if you were to keep the conference championship game and have eight, now you would have 16 games being played by the national champion and the national runner-up. That's an NFL season. That's an NFL season. And I think they've got to be very careful about the zeal with which they're doing this. Football is the most popular sport in the country. The NFL is number one and college football is number two. And there's no question the college football playoff was a tremendous first-year success, which I'm not surprised. People love games with stakes. And games with stakes are really important to draw interest. And I think that's important. That's why the college football playoff succeeded. People sat down on New Year's Day, they watched the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl, and they had meaning to it. I thought that was terrific. All right. Troy in New Columbia. Trey in New Columbia. Go ahead.
Hi there, Steve. Hey, I got a question for you about this. Do you think with them, if they did go and cut out the conference championship games, that the revenue that everyone would bring in a pool, do you think that'd be more than enough to make up for the money? Because in the end, it's really going to be about the money then to make up for that.
You're absolutely right. And I'm wondering now, after watching the cutbacks at ESPN, as to how deep the money pool is.
Okay.
I mean, that's the thing that I'm starting to wonder about right now, Trey. The Big Ten needs to strike its deal as quickly as possible. In my eyes, they're the last ones to have it out there, because ESPN's gone through a series of cutbacks here because these contracts are so expensive. Adding another layer, you'd save money because you would not. Okay, it may be a break-even proposition for this reason. ABC carries the ACC, CBS the SEC, Fox carries the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 is carried by ABC. So you'd be saving some money by not having those payouts and just directing it toward the college football playoff. So it could be very close to being a break-even proposition financially.
Yeah, because that's one way they could go and bring it for the schools there to say, and the conferences to say, hey, you're not getting this money from the conference championship game, but we're going to go and take the pool money from the 8-team playoff, and that first round, everyone would go and get a split pot of that money, and in the end, it should be, you know, relatively close, I would think.
The other part, too, is how do the coaches react to this?
having eight teams in a playoff, okay, that's great because it gives you more opportunities to get there, and that's a plus. But there's also a plus to being a divisional winner. And you know, instead of going one, like the Big Ten would be 1 through 14, there's a plus to being a divisional winner too. So
that's true.
I'm talking about coaches trying to make sure when it comes to job security. So
well, and recruiting is
a catch
22. Well.
Yeah, exactly right. Good point.
Well, I guess that's all really I had to go and bring up that point there.
Good points, Troy. Trey, appreciate it. Thanks, Trey. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment. You didn't send any more memos, right?
No, I think you're good.
Well, it's a lot more fun to talk about a college football playoff. Penn State turning the corner, getting itself in a position to be in something like that, considering what we were talking about 3 years ago this week. It's just, it's, the air is clear, more refreshing, not completely out of the woods because there's still more work to do in a lot of areas with this. But in the football realm, James Franklin coming in has done so much because he has tried very hard to get the pulse of Nittany Nation. It's one of the reasons why he announced last week no names on the uniforms. Part of the pulse of Nittany Nation. I mean, that's a coach that's trying. It's not a coach that's sitting there saying, it's my way or the highway. Look, I mean, I'm in town now. I'm the sheriff. I'll just trust me. It'll be fine. We're going to do things my way. He hasn't done that. He's tried to go around and listen to as many people as possible because he feels that an important part of what's going on with Penn State football is he needs to take care of recruiting, make sure there's a great product in the field, go by all the standards that Penn State's always had of strong academics, graduating players, but also the traditions are important, and he's listened to the fans. When they took the names off the uniforms last week, for all the fans to say they never listened to us, he's taken the time to listen to you. Jack Ham on the show tomorrow. We'll talk about this year's Nittany Lion football team and about the common sense that this coach has to really have the savvy to understand who his fan base happens to be. That's really important. He listened to you.